This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. Last week, Mercer released their annual Global Pension Index. Malaysia scored a C rating. And here in the studio with me to go through the index result and its implication is Mercer Malaysia CEO, Hesh Pipadi. Hesh, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So I was reading through the index and it says on the report card that for a pension system with a C rating, there is a major risk or shortcoming, which, if left unaddressed, will affect its long-term sustainability. Maybe I can start with that point and get you to elaborate on what that means.
Maybe, before I go into the rating itself, maybe I just spend a couple of minutes explaining how we assess systems around the world. So we look at, essentially we look at three pillars. So we look at adequacy, sustainability, and integrity. So adequacy refers to how much money are you going to get as a pensioner from the system. Sustainability is about, okay, promises have been made today, but are those promises sustainable? Is the system going to withstand, for example, demographic changes in the population and so on? And the final strand is, of course, is integrity. So we've got the promises that have been made. We've got funds backing them. But people have to have trust in the system. So how is the pension system regulated? Okay. So taking all those into account, a C rating is actually not a bad score. So yes, there are some risks, but I actually want to focus more on the positives because Malaysia was included in the index for the first time only last year. And a C rating reflects a very strong foundation. Okay. And we've got the Employees Provident Fund, which is it covers all the private sector employees. And on top of that, more recently, the government have introduced the private retirement scheme, the PRS. And of course, there's the public sector pension scheme as well, covering civil servants. So Malaysia has actually got a very good, sound foundation. The reason for a C rating is mainly around sustainability in the future, because we're a young country. You know, the average age of the average Malaysian is only in the late 20s, okay? But over time, the ratio of workers to retirees is going to increase. So as the population ages, you know, is the system able to withstand that? So there's a lot of risks around the aging population. So, you know, that's one aspect. But also around adequacy as well. You know, are we saving enough? And the way we look at adequacy is the World Bank has a five-pillar pension rating system. So basically, you know, where are you going to get your pension from? What's going to be your source of income once you retire? And the different sources, you know, we think of are, firstly, do we have Social Security, a state pension benefit? Secondly, is there a state-sponsored mandatory benefit like the EPF or the CPF in Singapore, Provident Fund? Third strand is employers providing pension schemes. So that's one big gap in Malaysia. Not many employers provide top-up plans to their employees. And then you get onto voluntary arrangements as well, individual savings and so on. So it's are there enough sources of income at the moment? No. But do we have a strong foundation? Absolutely. You know, the Employees Provident Fund has got some 200 billion of assets in there. And a lot of the changes that have been introduced recently, are really good, positive steps in the right direction. Sorry, long answer to a very short question.
So, yes, we do have a few funds which you mentioned, the EPF, the the public sector retirement fund incorporated, or co-op, and the voluntary one. So it's like a hybrid system of a defined contribution versus a defined benefit plan, mm-hmm. isn't it? And the majority of the world is moving towards a defined contribution plan. And which is better according to this index?
That's a difficult one to answer. But we can look to, I think defined benefit has its place. But where, so defined benefit means a guaranteed income stream, a guaranteed pension for the rest of your life. And where defined benefit has come under pressure. So you look at countries in the West, you look at my home country of the UK, there are £3 trillion of pension assets, yet we only have a C rating. And why is that? The main reason for that is that there's a lot of defined benefit pensions, promises made many years ago, sometimes decades ago, which are just unsustainable. And the reason for that is because of rising life expectancy and investment returns haven't been there. So, and similar situation in other countries as well. But there are examples of defined benefit systems in other countries which have which are working in a lot more sustainable manner. And one example I draw on is the Netherlands. So they still have very strong defined benefit pensions. Even during the financial crisis, their whole pension system came under some strain. But they took a collective decision across society, all the stakeholders, to actually reduce the overall benefit levels so that the system is maintained and they can carry on paying pensions to everybody. Okay, there were some winners and losers. But, you know, for the benefit of society as a whole, they kept it going. But where I think defined benefit, you know, moving closer to home in Asia, it's all defined contribution. But if we look just across the causeway in Singapore, they've recently introduced, actually it's been about 10 years now, but they've introduced what's called CPF Life, which means instead of getting your lump sum when you retire, you actually get an income stream. So when you retire as a pensioner, you know exactly how much you're going to get and you can plan accordingly. One of the issues with the Employees Provident Fund is that the research that they've done, I think it shows that most people go through their savings in 3 to 5 years. So providing, you know, a defined benefit income stream is pretty important. And I would say especially for the poorest members of society who really need that certainty of the income after they retire.
Yeah, and we have that option to withdraw all our savings lump sum at 55 too, isn't it? Is that a bad idea?
I think there's two schools of thought. You can take the view that, you know, it's as an employee, as an individual, it's your money. It's up to you what you do with it. But what we've seen is that we as individuals, we underestimate how long we're going to live. And it always leaves us with the risk that we're going to outlive our savings. And then, you know, what other sources do we look at, you know, to help us out in retirement? What's interesting is there was a study done, I think, 7-8 years ago by Kasana Research Institute looking at Malaysia. And they did a study of pensioners looking at where do you see your sources of retirement income coming from. So a whole list of sources. So you have the EPF, you have property, rental income, investments, and so on. And do you want to have a guess which source was the highest percentage?
I'm guessing it's either EPF or their children.
It was family, it was children and grandchildren. And it would be interesting to see how that has changed. So apparently around 60%, you know, were relying on their children and grandchildren So I've only got two. I need to have a few more, I think.
Yeah, it's an investment decision that you have to make when you're trying to start a family.
But the family structure is changing.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at the demographics of Malaysia, I was looking at some research on the demographics and, you know, back in the 1960s, so I think on average, Malaysians were having families with six or seven children. Now that's hovering just above two. We're not quite at the level that, you know, we're at in Singapore, where they're paying couples to have children. Incentivizing them. But as Malaysia becomes more affluent, you know, it's not surprising, you know, the average number of children is dropping. So, and that the second demographic change is we're living longer. So, you know, if you retired 30, 40 years ago, you expected to spend, you know, only about 5 years in retirement. Now it's a minimum of 20, possibly 25 or more.
So in that CPF life model where they pay you an annuity, how do they estimate how long a person would live after their retirement?
So that's based on, so they look at the population as a whole, and they estimate, you know, what the life expectancy has been in the past, but they also try and project, allow for improvements in the future. So they review it fairly frequently, and, you know, they can adjust the payments. So if life expectancy is expected to increase, the amount of pension might come down, the annual level of pension, but you still get the same overall amount.
Okay. And it's an opt-in option at the moment?
No, it's mandatory.
Mandatory. Oh,
yeah. So it started off as a voluntary,
right?
And then it moved to mandatory.
Wow. I'm speaking today to Mercer Malaysia CEO Hesh Pipadi. I'll ask him what we can learn from top-ranked countries on the index after a short break. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antek. My guest today is Mercer Malaysia's CEO, Hesh Pipadi. We're talking about the 2017 Global Pension Index, which was published by Mercer last week, which gave Malaysia a C grade. So we covered the reasons why Malaysia was given a C rating. And no country this year was awarded the A rating. What does that say about the world's preparedness for an aging population?
There's a lot of different challenges around the world, and there's no right answer. You know, when I talk to regulators, I talk to government ministers in different countries, everybody is faced with very different challenges. So when we look at countries in the West, they're burdened with promises made in the past which are just unaffordable. And the interest rates are low, and investment returns have been declining. And as the population has aged, you know, those promises are under more and more threat. So that's what's driving, you know, a lot of issues in a lot of the Western countries. The countries that score well, the highest scoring countries, places like Scandinavian countries. Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden.
The top three is Denmark, Holland and Australia.
Yeah, Denmark, Holland and Australia score B+, and then there's a whole raft of others that score B, including Norway, Finland, Sweden and Singapore, you know, the best in Asia. But if I could group all of those together, the main features that they share are, you know, a high level of adequacy. So there's sources of retirement income from different places. So in Europe, you have social security provided by the government, which is defined benefit, you know, a defined benefit income stream. So even if you have no savings from any other sources, you know you're going to be looked after by the state. But that comes at a cost.
Higher taxes.
And yes, so are we prepared in Malaysia to have taxes at 40, 50, plus percent? I don't think so. So it's a different social perspective, but the pension systems have been running for a number of years, and the amount of savings that they've built up comes from different sources. So you have the Social Security as the foundation, and then you have employer-sponsored plans providing a big source of income. So if I perhaps conceptually just take a step back, we're talking about adequacy, right? How much do people actually need to retire? Because I think that's an important question. And one concept we look at is how much of your salary just before you retire, how much do you need as an income stream to retire on? And that's a concept called the, you know, your replacement ratio, okay? Net replacement ratio. So if you think of somebody who's at the lower end of the earning scale, they might be spending 100% of their salary on the basics, the essentials in life. So they're going to need, you know, an income stream of close to 100% of what they were earning before they retired. And they're going to need that in retirement for the next 20 or so years. If you think of somebody who's earning a bit more, maybe they might need 50%. You don't have as many employment expenses, you've paid off your mortgage, you don't have education expenses for your kids and things like that. So the percentage drops the more you earn. And we did some analysis looking at what the savings gap is in Malaysia. So how much does an average Malaysian get from their EPF savings, potentially? So if they joined the EPF in their 20s, worked all the way through till retirement, how much would the EPF provide? And it provides a good level of income, you know, 25, 30%. The problem is that's the only source. And I think how this can be addressed in Malaysia is more incentives to encourage more employers and individuals to take up the private retirement scheme and also other employer-sponsored pension plans to supplement that.
When you make an analysis like that, what is the assumptions that you give for like increments, for example? And do you assume there are no breaks in employment for family or medical education?
Yeah, so we assume an average working life of, you know, 25, 30 years. So allowing for a few breaks in your employment. But I think the main thing when we're looking at comparisons like that is we're targeting a savings level, you know, a level of savings that's going to provide you with an income of at least 50 or 60% for the average person after you retire. And EPF is only halfway there. So where's the rest of it going to come from? And we found that the PRS, the private retirement scheme, you know, just contributing an extra 5% to that can make a really big difference. It can close that gap by 10%. The other thing we looked at is, again, I talked earlier about the power of compounding. Contributing extra contributions into your pension for just an extra 5 years can, again, close that gap by another 10%. So small changes can actually have a really big impact if we make them early enough.
So the EPF says that we need about 220,000 at 55 if we want to retire comfortably. And at the moment, only 18% of EPF members aged 54 and above has that, and they want to increase that to 50% by 2021. Are Malaysians not saving enough because it's just a habit that can be rectified, or do you think it's more systemic in the economy because they're not earning enough, so there's not enough to set aside for savings?
Okay, that's a tough one. I think we could all be better at saving. But I think I look at examples in other countries where they've managed to, where they faced similar issues, the saving levels for individuals wasn't as high as they should be, and what sort of changes have they introduced to incentivize and encourage people to contribute more? So looking to, for example, in the US, what they do in the US is employers encourage their employees to contribute to their pension plans by matching employee contributions. So you could have a system whereby employers, perhaps I pay ringgit in, or if I pay 100 ringgits in, my employer matches it with an extra 100 or pays an extra 50, whatever, an extra incentive to contribute. That's one way to do it. The other way to get into the savings habit is perhaps to have the auto opt-in, auto enrollment. So this is something they introduced in the UK. It's quite common in the States as well, where what we found in the UK was a lot of a whole generation of people were, because pensions became voluntary, and a whole generation of employees were contributing nothing at all. So the government gradually introduced auto-enrollment. So it's not mandatory, but the way it works is, you know, I join my employer, and unless I fill out a form to say I don't want to take part in the pension plan, I'm automatically opted in. And am I going to miss 1% or 2% or even 5% of my pay every month if it just goes straight away? You know, so it's using, I guess, behavioral economics, you know, those concepts to try and nudge people into saving more. And it's been pretty successful. And I'd love to see something like that in Malaysia. You know, I think the private retirement scheme has been a terrific success. I mean, the latest figures are it's only been running for 3-4 years, and already there's 1.8 billion ringgits in there. But I'd love to see a lot more. And if we had more auto-enrollment, more companies opening up their own private retirement schemes for their employees, you know, we can really see those savings rates going up.
I think the index also tried to address the fact that there is a number of Malaysians, a sizable number of Malaysians, who do not have any access to pension savings. And so what can we do about that?
So looking at some figures I've got in front of me, so, you know, our labour force in Malaysia is about 14 million. So we've got 7 million, about half, who are in actively contributing to the EPF. We've got another roughly 2 million who are under the, you know, public sector pension plans, so covered under QAP and civil service schemes, which leaves around 5 million, 35%, who are outside of the labor force and don't receive anything at all. And how do we encourage, you know, are they, whether they are housewives, students, or others who aren't actively in the workforce, how can we provide savings for those? And this is, you know, a question for society as a whole. And I think this is the role of social security. You know, I feel very passionately that collectively we should look after the most vulnerable in society. And it's our collective responsibility to provide those, you know, who have the least. So that should come from social security, you know, funded through taxes or other sources.
Yeah, it's a bit of a misnomer, isn't it, to call what we have in Malaysia a pension, because it's a combination of, it's a hybrid system.
Yeah, yeah. So we, when we talk about pension, we talk about, yeah, it's more of a retirement savings vehicle, yeah.
So we mentioned just now Denmark, Holland and Australia, they're mm-hmm. the best. So we can't exactly replicate it entirely because of socioeconomic context and circumstances, but it seems that reading your index and the reports by the World Bank that we know what is good and what we need to do. So mm-hmm. why do countries not do them? Like, take the example for Japan, Italy and France, which the index cited as having unsustainable models. Why do some countries not seem to adjust or adapt their retirement systems for the changing demographic?
Japan has the largest retirement fund in the world. Okay, but it's still not enough. Why is it not enough? Because their ratio of pensioners is incredibly high to workers. So they are hit by the demographic changes with the, you know, with the silver population in Japan. And there are also other systemic issues around some countries. It's actually, in some countries, it's actually once you've made a promise, not just legally, but politically, it's very hard to take those promises or reduce them, even if the system is unsustainable. If I contrast Japan with, for example, the Netherlands, okay? So they face the similar issue, you know, huge. Obviously, they've got an aging population, but also they suffered under the financial crisis, okay? The pension funds, there wasn't enough money there to actually pay out everything that was promised in the past. And there were a few years of very tough discussions between the government, employer organizations, trade unions, and collectively as a society, they decided, you know, everybody has to share a bit of the pain. So even pensioners, people who are already receiving pensions, sacrificed for the sake of society as a whole. Whereas in other countries, it's actually very difficult to make those sort of bold decisions, if you like. Mm. So it once, you know, a lot of countries are suffering from legacy promises made many years ago, which are very hard to take away.
Is working longer one of the answer?
Okay. So one of the, so there's no one answer, but and I want to, you know, reflect on Malaysia, because Malaysia is doing a lot of good stuff and moving in the right direction. And like I said before, you know, we've got a really strong foundation. We've got a lot of time to get things right. And there's some great steps. So, you know, Malaysia, before the private retirement scheme, there was no extra pillar on top of the EPF. Not really. You know, some employers provided small things here and there, but not much. So that's a fantastic step in the right direction to introduce the private retirement scheme. I'd love to see take-up of that increase. So that's a great step. Also, we've recognized that people are living longer. And although you can still take your retirement savings at age 55, you know, the minimum retirement age has actually increased to 60. So if you want to, you can work for longer. And as we age and we, as a society, and we see longer life expectancy, we've got time to actually make changes and actually allow for increases in the retirement age. But I think the whole nature of work is changing as well. So I don't think it's about having a fixed retirement age anymore. I think back to when I started work back in London, you know, 20-odd years ago, my retirement age probably was 55 under my company plan. Then it increased to 60, 65. I think my latest pension age is probably around 68, 69, might even be 70 plus by the time I retire. But I think it's not about having a fixed retirement age. It's about having the flexibility to carry on working. So what we're going to see, I think, is more people working on into their golden years, maybe on a reduced hours type basis, and employers being more flexible, allowing, you know, older employees to continue working to supplement their retirement income.
Is there a domino effect of whether or not the economy is able to simultaneously hold on to those above 55 and as well absorb younger workers who are graduating from colleges?
I think there's room for both. I think the problem with, and again, this is a philosophical question, this is my personal view. I think you know, a lot of people have got a lot more years to give in terms of, and there shouldn't be a cliff edge where you're forced to retire, if you like. And as Malaysia develops and grows as a nation, you know, we can benefit from the experience of, you know, these individuals rather than forcing them to leave the workforce just because of an arbitrary retirement age.
Yeah, an aging population is only bad if people who want to work can't work, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so is the notion that older workers are inferior to younger workers backed by studies, or is it just plain ageism?
I think it's just traditionally we've had fixed retirement ages around the world, and it's changing, So I think the attitude to retirement is changing, and part of it is purely due to the fact that, you know, the level of savings isn't adequate, but also policy makers, employers are realizing that, you know, it can be quite arbitrary to force people to retire when they've got so many more years to give. If they want to continue working, we should allow them to do so.
We've run out of time, but if there is one message that you'd like to gift from this index about the state of Malaysia's pension system, what would it be?
I'd go back to my the point I've mentioned right at the beginning. You know, a C rating is a very strong score for Malaysia. We've got a very strong foundation with the EPF and the introduction of the private retirement scheme, really good, strong basis. And there are lots of lessons to be learned from other countries on how we can avoid the problems of storing up problems for the future. And as long as we make changes in a measured way, allow for changes in increasing retirement age, introduce more incentives for employers and employees, you know, to build up greater levels of savings, you know, we're going to be in a very strong place and hopefully have a B rating in a few years.
Hash Tripathi, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.